From the heart of our nation's capital, this is Washington Watch Weekend Edition. Now, here's your host, David Salkeld.
This week on the Weekend Edition of Washington Watch, Big Brother is watching, and the left creates another boogeyman label. Greetings, fellow patriots. I am David Salkeld, and I'm a constitutional conservative, Christian husband, and Reagan Republican. On Tuesday of this week, Senator Ted Cruz and some of his colleagues in the Senate sent a letter to the Attorney General over the way the Department of Justice has chosen cases worthy of prosecution. Here's Family Research Council President Tony Perkins as he introduced Senator Cruz during Thursday's program.
All right, this week, five Republican senators sent a letter to Attorney General Merrick Garland demanding access to all communications between the Department of Justice and the American Medical Association. This was in follow-up to the AMA's request that the department investigate what they call disinformation campaigns against gender-altering surgeries on children. It's not difficult to see why these senators, or anyone else for that matter, would be troubled by the actions of this Department of Justice. Now, will this pattern of abusing investigative authority silence critics and stifle policy debates? Well, joining me now to discuss this and more is one of the authors of the letter, Texas Senator Ted Cruz. He serves on six committees in the Senate, including the Senate Judiciary Committee. Senator Cruz, welcome back to Washington Watch.
Tony, always good to be with you. Thank you for having me.
All right, from reading the letter, it seems like you are concerned that this specific incident with the AMA, but perhaps more concerning, this is a pattern that we see from the Biden Justice Department. Tell us about it.
Well, this is really an intersection of two things that are deeply troubling. One is the politicization of the Department of Justice and the FBI under Joe Biden. And I have to say, Merrick Garland as Attorney General, I think, has done more damage to the integrity of DOJ and the FBI than any Attorney General in history. He has acquiesced in using DOJ as a partisan enforcement tool. And we saw that strikingly early in the Biden administration when the National Association of School Boards sent a letter to the White House asking for the Department of Justice to target parents, target moms and dads, going to school boards and exercising their First Amendment rights and expressing concern about teaching critical race theory, about transgender ideology, about failure to protect kids from sexual assault. And Merrick Garland, 5 days later, wrote a memo to the FBI directing the FBI to target parents, to treat them essentially as domestic terrorists using the Patriot Act. And it was blatantly politicized. It was wrong. Now, in this instance, we have that willingness to politicize DOJ intersecting with the left's radical ideology on transgenderism, and in particular, the horrific practice that we are seeing more and more of so-called hospitals engaging in genital mutilation of children, and in some instances, young children, giving them hormones that permanently alter their body, that sterilize them. And here, the AMA is asking DOJ to similarly abuse its power, but in this case, to go after anyone, to go after reporters, to go after you or me, if we shine a light on the horrific practices being carried out by these so-called hospitals. And it is, I think, an incredibly dangerous invitation to an abuse of power by the Biden DOJ.
No question that it is an abuse of power, but also isn't it a misdirection of resources? When you consider, we're talking about activities that are actually protected under the Constitution. We're talking about parents concerned about what's happening at school boards. We're parents that may be concerned about children being mutilated, as you've pointed out, through this gender transition surgeries. And then we've got over a dozen pro-lifers in the last 3 weeks. Pro-life advocates who have been exercising First Amendment freedoms outside of abortion clinics have been arrested under the FACE Act by the Biden administration, while America is awash with lawlessness, murder rates going up in major cities all across this country. This is outrageous that they're focused on people exercising their freedom while criminals run rampant.
Look, you're exactly right. This is the Department of Justice that can't be bothered to go after Black Lives Matter rioters or Antifa rioters. It can't be bothered to go after terrorists or violent protesters outside the homes of Supreme Court justices, even though it's against federal law They don't enforce the law in any of those instances. But when it comes to pro-life activists, they will send an army of FBI agents to open up the door, guns drawn, and arrest them. And it's naked politicization of DOJ and the FBI. You know, as it so happens, I've got a book coming out next week on exactly this topic. The book is entitled Justice Corrupted, How the Left Has Weaponized the Legal System. It starts with Richard Nixon, and Richard Nixon tried to use DOJ and the FBI and the IRS to target his enemies, and by and large, the system worked. The agencies refused to cooperate, and Nixon resigned in disgrace. Well, what Nixon tried to do, Barack Obama and Joe Biden succeeded in doing. Barack Obama put hard partisans into career positions at DOJ and the FBI, the intelligence agencies, and the IRS, and targeted his political enemies. It has now metastasized under Joe Biden. And let me encourage your listeners, go to Amazon or wherever you get your books, and you can pre-order the book that comes out next week, Justice Corrupted, How the Left Has Weaponized the Legal System, explains exactly how the Department of Justice has been turned into the political enforcers for this Biden White House.
Senator Cruz, I want to ask you an underlying issue, a concern, a greater concern past just the immediate. I was in Texas last night speaking to a group, and everywhere I go, I'm sure you hear the same thing, people concerned about this lawlessness and a growing frustration. Yep. My concern is that if we give in to this lawlessness because there seems to be a two-track system of justice, our whole system, our republic implodes. We are a country that works because of the rule of law.
That is absolutely right, and the rule of law is something precious. Listen, I don't want a Republican Department of Justice. I don't want a Republican FBI. I don't want a Democrat DOJ or FBI. I want a DOJ and FBI that enforces the law regardless of party, regardless of who you are. And sadly, for the Democrats, it's a one-way ticket. So when it comes to Hillary Clinton and her violations of law, they turn a blind eye. But with Donald Trump, they sent an army of FBI agents to storm his home. And it is over and over again the double standard that is glaringly obvious. And it is remarkable. Merrick Garland is perfectly willing to have the DOJ function in a nakedly partisan way, and it's completely unjustifiable.
Senator, very quickly, I want to get your take on the vice president responding to the governor of Texas and other governors who are helping the nation see the depth of the problem of illegal immigration. Here she is responding on Late Night with Seth Meyers. Play clip number 10, please.
I just think it's an absolute dereliction of duty. If you see a problem, and if we agree that we need to address it, then if you're a leader, participate in a solution, right?
Senator, very quickly, where's the dereliction of duty?
Well, you know, there's an old line in Washington is that a gaffe is when a politician accidentally tells the truth. I got to say, Kamala accidentally told the truth. She's right. There is a dereliction of duty on her part and Joe Biden's part. Joe Biden refuses to enforce the law. Kamala is ostensibly the border czar. She's in charge of the border. You know, she hasn't been to the Rio Grande Valley once. 4.4 million people have crossed illegally. I've been down there over and over again. I've seen the children who are physically assaulted and sexually assaulted by the human traffickers. I've seen the women raped by the human traffickers. I've seen the dead bodies abandoned on Texas farms And this arrogant, hypocritical Democrat doesn't care at all and says, well, gosh, when you send them to Martha's Vineyard, it disturbs my billionaire donors. The absolute hypocrisy of it. I'm sorry, Tony, but it makes me angry because I've seen the human suffering that their lawlessness and open borders are causing.
And it's coming to communities across America. That's why it has to stop. Senator Cruz, always great to talk with you. Thanks so much for joining us today.
Thanks, my friend. God bless.
You can find out more about Ted Cruz, along with information on his book, when you visit tonyperkins.com. While you're there, you can check out our new site, The Washington Stand. The stories you find there are about the issues you care about from the Christian perspective you deserve. Again, you'll find the link over at tonyperkins.com.
From Asia to Africa, from the Middle East to Europe and beyond, the global persecution of Christians becomes more ominous with every passing year. Heroic Faith serves as a tribute to the courageous believers who face grave and often deadly threats, yet bravely persevere in their devotion to Jesus Christ. The book highlights personal stories from those who endure religious persecution and takes a close look at the tragic circumstances Christians often face due to dangerous and deadly opposition to their faith. The book's true stories of persistence and faithfulness offer inspiration and hope. Heroic Faith also provides insights into the ideologies driving the hostility and persecution, what steps the U.S. government might take to help, and how readers can best respond to the struggles of the faithful. You can get your copy of Heroic Faith wherever books are sold or by going to frc.org/heroicfaith.
Today we live in a culture where young men, husbands, and fathers are constantly presented with terrible illustrations of manhood. In this culture of gender confusion, how can boys and men figure out what it even means to be a man of God? That is why Family Research Council created Stand Courageous Men's Ministry. It's led by men who are compassionate leaders, who understand the issues of the day, and will invest in unpacking our role as defenders, providers, instructors, chaplains, and battle buddies, so that we can embrace our identity as men and fight the battles every man faces. God made each one of us on purpose, and He had a purpose for making you a man. Stand Courageous offers many resources to help you step into your God-given role. We have podcasts, coaching videos, books, Bible reading plans, community opportunities, and more. Men, this ministry is for you. Learn more and access our resources at standcourageous.com.
Welcome back to the weekend edition of Washington Watch. I'm David Salkeld. Wednesday evening, we held a special Pray Vote Stand event in Leesburg, Virginia, and the reason we held it is because people in the media seem to be using the phrase Christian nationalist a lot. Here's just a small sample.
Christian nationalism is not Christianity.
What is Christian nationalism?
Christian nationalism.
Christian nationalism.
Violent Christian nationalism.
Christian nationalism is crying out for a reality check.
Is it loving your family? Is it going to church? Is it praying for America? Is it a denomination? A policy? A political party?
Christian nationalism.
Christian nationalism.
Christian nationalism.
In their minds, they've been sort of put on earth by God to form this country into a certain kind of Christian country, whether the majority wants to or not.
The rise of the term Christian nationalism. Where did it come from, and why is it being used?
And that is what we're going to talk about tonight. That was just a sample of how the term Christian nationalism is being used. Join me now to discuss this and preview a bit of what we will cover tonight here at the Pray Vote Stand Town Hall meeting are three of tonight's guest speakers. Joining me is former Congresswoman Michelle Bachmann. She's now the Dean of the Robertson School of Government at Regent University. Dr. Stephen Coughlin, he is Principal at Unconstrained Analytics. And Dr. Mark David Hall, he is author and professor at George Fox University. Lady and gentlemen, welcome to Washington Watch.
Pleasure to be here.
Dr. Hall, let me start with you. The term Christian nationalism, everybody seems to be using it, but what does it mean?
You know, that's a great question. Thank you for that. And this is not a scientific way to explore the question, but if you do a Google Ingram search, you'll see that almost no one is using Christian nationalism prior to 2006. No Christian is going around saying, I am a Christian nationalist. No one's saying we should promote Christian nationalism. It begins being popular in 2006 when critics start using it as a label to label Christians who bring their faith into the public square for ends they don't like. Now, these critics of Christian nationalism, initially, they're all popular authors. They're not academics, by and large. They work for places like the Freedom From Religion Foundation. So that should suggest
there's
an agenda at work here. And so you have this criticism after criticism of these horrible Christians who want to bring about a theocracy and oppress women and African-Americans and all racial minorities. And it's just a horrible, toxic thing that no one would want to be associated with.
Right. To me, that sounds like political warfare. Stephen, what's driving this? What are they using it for?
Well, to pick up on a line you brought up earlier, I think they actually did decide they were going to target normally patriotic Christian Americans. And what they did was they created a faux term, Christian nationalism, and they gave it all these negative attributes and then used that to attack Christians. It's part of what you call an intersectional line of attack in a political warfare model, which is the Maoist insurgency model, which we believe is the premier principal form of Marxism.
And that's what's driving the left today. I mean, I've watched this. Michelle, I know you have as well. In my 20 years here at the Family Research Council, we went from having liberals like Chris Matthews. I used to go on Hardball and debate him all the time. You don't see conservatives going on MSNBC because they're not liberals. They're leftists, and they don't want to have a discussion. And Michelle, a lot of this is about political elections. Why all of a sudden this intense focus on Christian nationalism right before an extremely important midterm election?
Because it all comes about holding on to power. That's what it's about. There's only one party power now in the United States, in Washington, D.C. They don't want to let it go. That's it. Bottom line, they want to hold on to power. And what they have seen is the power of the church. The epicenter of power in the United States opposing their agenda is the church and the principles of the Bible. They don't like pastors preaching on issues. They don't like congregants being inspired from the Bible. And so that's why we're the target. They want to silence us. So this isn't some big academic thing. And Mark David Hall, Dr. Hall, is going to be talking about the research and how phony baloney a lot of the research is on this topic out there. But it's all designed to give a veneer of credibility that what they're saying is true. And I think what we're going to be demonstrating tonight, what they're saying is hogwash. And so we need to not be intimidated as believers. We need to pray, vote, stand. And having done all, stand. I think I've heard you say
it works, doesn't it? Dr. Hall, I want to ask you this question, going back to kind of the definition, because I'm used to the left's tactics, the Marxist tactic of labeling to the purpose. I mean, this actually goes back to the Rules for Radicals. They do the same thing. Mm-hmm. But when you look like what happened just recently, about 2 weeks ago in Pennsylvania, Doug Mastriano, who is running for governor there, called upon his supporters to pray and fast for 40 days. Yeah. Now, I've been a part of a lot of prayer and fasting events. In fact, even when I was in office and a candidate, I did the same thing. Well, the media, some of the media, responded immediately saying, evidence that he is a Christian nationalist. Well, that would actually put a lot of the leaders in the history of this country into the category of Christian nationalist.
Throughout American history, Christians at their best have brought their faith into the public square to fight for liberty and justice for all, in creating just colonial laws, in opposing slavery, and promoting civil rights. I mean, think about the leaders in the civil rights movement, the Reverend Martin Luther King Jr., Ralph Abernathy, Andrew Young, on and on they do. Now, what goes on here is a bit of labeling, because even the critics, even the better academic critics of Christian nationalism, will say it's perfectly fine for the Reverend Martin Luther King Jr. to bring his faith into the public square to advocate for civil rights. But if you dare to bring your faith in the public square to oppose abortion or to argue for a conception of religious liberty that goes beyond freedom of worship, you're a sexist or a bigot. That's an evil sort of Christian nationalism that must be oppressed.
I throw this out for anyone. My observation is that the intensity of this began to ramp up over the issue of human sexuality. When the redefinition of marriage came, then there seemed to have to be a clear line made, and anyone who dare take on that issue had to be eliminated, had to be silenced. And I think that's where we've really seen the intensity of this, because these things, for people who actually believe the Bible, they're non-negotiable. It's not our truth, it's God's truth, and we have to, as I was just talking with Pastor Gary, we have to come in alignment with the Word. We don't make the Word of God come in alignment with us.
What I think, especially on this issue with sexuality, of a genderless society, that's the move right now. We're going to have a genderless society, and you make up your own truth. This is the ultimate fabrication of truth, is to make up what your human sexuality is. So that is so bizarre, so over the top. We've never seen this kind of a conversation before. And so for that reason, They need to make us look like we're the oddballs. This is weird. This is bizarre to say that we're a genderless society. And so for us talking about what has been normative for 5,000 years of human history, they're working overtime to make us look like we're the bizarre ones.
Right. I want to go to the issue of this is creating a void and a vacuum and chaos. Something always fills that. In your study of Marxism and your study of essentially political warfare, where does this lead?
Well, I think what we're seeing right now is a phrase that is popular in my circles called liquefying reality, where they're at the point of a demoralization campaign where people can no longer understand. They're happy that people who want to talk about genderless society will do it. What they really call the victory is people who know it's not true and will still say it. The demand that 2 + 2 = 5. And that's the imposition of will on people.
So was COVID a test of that concept where we just see people falling in line like lemmings?
Well, we actually put something out warning. We got to the National Security Council warning that the narrative on COVID was completely severable from COVID itself. And within the narrative on COVID, it enforced what we call Marxist mass line enforcement narratives. And the word mass line comes from Mao. And that right down the line, we were able to call the election a year ahead. We had something out that it was the whole radical summer was going to start in Minnesota before that thing was started, because we can see what they're saying, and we can see where they're going, and we can forecast what they're doing. They're that predictable, but we have to make a decision to put aside our college-educated taught political science narratives, which I think are designed to create a scientific language or pseudoscientific language that overwrites what people are seeing and redefine it.
So were you encouraged at all by, it took a little while to get some traction, but there was some strong pushback to, and I'm talking about COVID in particular, because I do think that was kind of a test run for the left. There was a lot of pushback against that, and it tells me that our society as a whole has not picked up and is not waving the white flag.
I don't think people have given up at all. I think people have to remember that what's going on right now is Republicans have won the election on the issue that is what people here come to vote for. It's the people we elect who will not execute that when it happens, when they win, even if they win big. So I don't think it's a problem of the masses. I get to Minnesota. My mother-in-law died. She's from Minnesota. If you went one step outside of Minneapolis, all you saw was Trump flags. It's all you saw. And I am one of those people who wonders whether Ellison ever won that election. And I think that might want to be one of those states where that was an early...
So you're a denier.
Well, I am a...
Another one, I'm just picking. Yes. That's another one. That's a little... You haven't been around me enough, so you didn't pick up on that. That's the labeling.
Absolutely.
That's the labeling.
But because then I think that's part of the confusion campaign. And I think Romans 1 really speaks to this, the fact that we are swimming in a sea of lies right now in America and have been through COVID.
Right.
I think that's what you're talking about. That's a test run for lies, where you lie and lie and lie to people. And once you believe the lie and you spout the lie yourself, then you move into delusion.
Right.
That's what the scripture says. So we have a lot of cognitive dissonance within the church, I think, even.
You're absolutely right. I think it goes back to the issue of the lack of courage when you know the truth, but you're afraid to say the truth.
And that's where pastors come in. That's where pastors in the church come in, because you need to put a stake in the ground for what truth is and not deviate it. And so we have to keep our heads about us as believers,
right.
I think.
Well, and going back, and I was picking on that issue of the election, but there's a lot of evidence out there to show that there was a manipulation of the election process, whether it would be the boxes that Mark Zuckerberg, put in. But there's legitimate questions to be raised. And in a republic such as ours, you have to be free to ask questions
and
answer.
And Regent University was the first university that did an election integrity seminar to question what just happened in 2020. So if anyone wants to see it, it's regent.edu/election integrity. It's fantastic. It is 7 hours hours of evidence immediately out of the gate, where people came in and gave affidavits and all the rest about the fact that things weren't kosher on this election. And remember, that's when people were being thrown off Twitter.
Right.
They were thrown off Facebook. They were losing their jobs, if you remember, if you questioned.
If you reframe how to look at that election, and we did reframe it before the election, to say that the Marxist left was going to use the critical race theory, which is critical race, which is Marxism, to delegitimize the election. The fact remains that no matter what you personally think about that election, when you can show, I think now a majority of people have questions about that election, the very fact that the elected people will not do a real investigation is itself the actual victory, the delegitimization of the electoral process in the face of a public who knows something's wrong.
So what do you do when you have the media that buys that and goes along with that, and so that the platforms by which we use to have these conversations as a nation are basically, as you said, shut off, Michelle, when you have Twitter, Facebook removing people. So what happens at that point?
Well, I think Christian nationalism is a part of that, because I think that it is a national smear campaign so that we are quiet, so that we self-censor, so we don't speak, to keep the church silent. If the church is silent, the left wins, the progressive wins, Satan wins if the church is silent. And that's why we have to keep our heads about us and tell the truth.
Stephen, isn't there a danger, though, where there's this repression of half the population and they're marginalized? Isn't there a danger that there could be an eruption of anger? And I mean, I think this is just a very dangerous place for a republic to be in.
I think it's very dangerous. You know, we argue that what you see going on in America is a replay of the Weimar Republic in certain respects, where they tried to correct all the errors they made in the Weimar Republic, and they're trying to keep a cap on some of these narratives attacking people who they see as possibly becoming problems ahead of time and intimidating them into silence. But they're playing a game with violence, and you know, it's to the people running this, I would say, when you're, it doesn't matter if you're riding on the back of a tiger. That tiger sometimes rides you, and sometimes you ride the tiger.
Yeah.
So. And Dr. Mark David Hall is from Portland, Oregon, where he saw
nice
it firsthand.
Spot.
Antifa.
Yeah. From outside of Portland, thankfully. Yeah. No, Portland's just it's a war zone. It's a disaster, and businesses and people are fleeing if they're at all able to do so.
Well, unfortunately, that's all the time we have for today. I'm David Salkeld. Thank you for being with us. And I look forward to having you back here again next week for the weekend edition of Washington Watch with Tony Perkins.
Washington Watch Weekend Edition is powered by the Family Research Council and is entirely listener-supported. For more information on anything you've heard today, or to find out how you can partner with us in our ongoing efforts to promote faith, family, and freedom, visit TonyPerkins.com.